I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. This program is brought to you by the Amazing FBA Mentoring Program. The mentoring program is there for you, whether you are just starting out or you have an existing product and you want to add another product, or you want to scale up from a few thousand pounds or dollars per month up into the sort of $25,000 a month or so mark, at which point then I would probably hand you over to the care of the 10K Collective Mastermind if you're in the UK. Is it for you if you're outside the UK? Absolutely. I've got an American client, a British client, weirdly, but who's in Australia. I've got an Australian client in London. I've worked with people in Poland and in Ireland. So it's pretty international. This works for everybody because everyone has similar issues. If you're selling in America, if you're selling in the UK or Europe, or you're planning to sell in UK, Europe or America, I've sold in all those marketplaces and coached people and all that. So all of those people will find that this is a very, very helpful program for them. Why one-to-one mentoring? It's pretty simple, really, because isolation is a dream killer. Trying to learn something just from the raw fire hose of YouTube and podcasts and Facebook groups is going to drive you nuts. But even if you've got the structured work of a course, which I definitely would recommend, I did that myself, and I work with people with my course now, I still think it's really, there's no substitute for being able to use somebody as a sounding board, and learning from somebody who's been there before can help you deal with the head trash and have clear, simple processes and hold you accountable to them. So if that sounds attractive to you, guess what? We've got an amazing deal. I very, very rarely reduce the price of my mentoring because I don't want to devalue it in the marketplace, but I'm doing it because I neglected my marketing before Christmas with the PLP, the private level process course I was creating, and I've got a tax bill coming up because I've had a successful year, but that unfortunately means I owe the government a lot of tax. So for those reasons, I need to get a cash influx, so I'm willing to lower my prices for the next three or four people. After that, it goes back to standard prices, and I will indeed put them up in future, as I have done in the past. So if you're interested in exploring that, it's application only. I'm not going to hard sell you into anything. If it's not right for you, we won't work together. But many, many people have found it very helpful. If you want to find out more about that and see some of the testimonials from the happy people that I've worked with, amazingfba.com/ mentoring, MENTORING. Thank you so much for listening. Now on with the show. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Michael Veazey speaking. Welcome to the show. Today, we are going to talk about the power of elimination. So the previous thing, this is part of one of our mindset and productivity series. The previous episode we talked about, the previous episode in this series, I should say, intelligent goal setting. So if you haven't listened to that, go back and have a listen. Go to amazingfba.com/blog, B-L-O-G. And yes, it sounds a bit strange. The word podcast is reserved for the actual podcast feed, so don't go to that. You'll get a load of gobbledygook. So the power of elimination. Productivity is meaningless unless you define what you're trying to produce. So we talked about that before. For example, trying to make more profit, not just more revenue. Get some quality time with your family, not just more time saved for some reason. Building a team, not just finding a bunch of people who can be micromanaged to solve immediate problems. Building a sellable business, etc. Have a listen to that episode if you haven't had a go at that already. So after you've done that, you can start to measure these things. And then my key question is this. This is my key question for checking about whether you should eliminate something. So everyone talks about doing more stuff, but I think the power of getting rid of stuff, doing less stuff, and stopping doing stuff is very, very underrated and underused. So my key question is this. Does it produce wealth, health, or happiness? Health, wealth, or happiness? Because I think those are the three things that most of us want, and we need health. A lot of us go for wealth and then lose our health by stressing out about it, which is not good. And quite often people go for wealth and they're not happy because they're working too hard and they don't enjoy the hard work. And that's the key. So does it produce wealth, health, or happiness? If it doesn't deliver, it's got to go. That's my saying about this. So some principles that will apply to help you use a sort of quick Swiss Army knife of the mind to help you decide whether you need to eliminate things or not, and to look at candidates for elimination. The first thing is the 80-20 principle. By the way, all three of them, I think, are beautifully articulated by Richard Koch, K-O-C-H. Go to the show notes if you want to hear about that. So be amazingfba.com/318 for this episode, 318.
And Richard Koch is the granddaddy, the daddy, the man, the expert, the boss, the absolute fount of all wisdom, in my opinion. And I'm not the only one. He made himself rich by following this stuff. So do check out Richard Koch, K-O-C-H. First is 80-20 principle, which there's a book for. Most of what we do doesn't matter. 20% of anything will produce 80% of the wins. 20% of your time will produce 80% of your revenue. 20% of your products will produce 80% of your revenue. Possibly 100% of your profit, because quite often when you analyze it, a lot of products are just not profitable or actually lose you money. Equally, at the other end of the scale, 20% of things will produce 80% of the downside. So if you find those and eliminate them, you can eliminate some terrible clients. If you're in a client-type business, if you have products, one of which is kind of really dragging you down because it's so problematic and you eliminate that, then you've suddenly got rid of probably 80% of your problems, right? So the first principle, the 80-20 principle, and there is a book to that name by Richard Koch, K-O-C-H. The second principle is the STAR principle, and again, there is a book by Richard Koch. I'm not really recommending these because they're a book. I probably do have some Amazon affiliate link set up at the website if we've got round to it, and it's not going to make me even the cost of a cup of coffee in London, so I'm not really motivated by that, but they are amazing books, so do read them. The STAR principle basically means if a product or a business is positioned as the market leader in a fast-growing market, is a star product. The same with an entire business. So the rule with a star product is invest, invest, invest. So put all the money you can spare into it. However, if it is a follower, i.e. not the greatest revenue as a percentage of the market, right? So for example, if you're selling something in a market where the market as a whole makes £100,000 on page one and the market leader makes £50,000 and you're making £5,000, then you are a follower, not a leader, right? Very much a follower. If it's in a slow-growing niche as well, it's what we technically call a dog, okay? So the rule is run for cash. Sell it out if you can, and then eliminate it. If a product is a leader in a slow-growing niche, then it is a cash cow. By the way, we've talked about this extensively before, so look at the strategy category or the, I think you'd call it strategy or goals and planning on the website for more information for this particular type of topic. So I'm touching on stuff briefly that we've touched on in more detail. Again, see the show notes for more details. We'll put a link in there to previous episodes. If it's a leader by, again, for example, if you've got £100,000 revenue total on page one of Amazon for a particular set of keywords, and your product is doing, say, £50,000, and the next closest revenue by any product is £20,000, then you are the leader, measured by market share, measured by percentage of the revenue, right? To put it simply. And if that's all blowing your brains, because that's a bit of a new concept, then go and listen to the STAR Principle episode. But basically, those are great places to get the funding for your STAR products or STAR businesses. So if your products are not a STAR or a cash cow, they are definitely a candidate for the chop. And if they're also not even profitable, they definitely should go. Okay, the third principle is another one by Richard Koch. It comes in two flavors, which is the simplify principle. It comes in two flavors. The simplest version is the approach exemplified by Henry Ford. By the early 1920s, he'd boiled down his offering to one model of car, the Model T, famously available in any color you want as long as it's black. The reason being that the black paint dried quickest and it enabled his assembly line to work. This meant multiple cost savings in his production process and thus massive price reductions for consumers, which he passed on to them because the price came down. That massively, massively increased the market for cars. It went from being a luxury good for the privileged few to being a mass market item, basically due to Henry Ford. So you often eliminate features or processes to do this, and the same can apply to our products. Be warned, simplifying is not the same as simple. It often takes great insights, large amounts of work, and a lot of experimenting, not to mention money, but it's a proven path to success. Okay, so simplify isn't simple. Just want to say it's a tough journey, but it's worth having, worth going on, I should say. Alternatively, you can do what Koch calls a proposition simplify. You can simplify the consumer experience. The classic example is the iPad. It's way easier for consumers to use than alternative computers. Even famously, 1 and 2 year olds, you know, swipe quite intuitively. By the same token, it was a nightmare to create and have produced initially. It's not realistic for most e-commerce entrepreneurs I know, but it is possible. So simplifying in the sense that the iPad is simple to use, use is probably not realistic for most of us. But if you are really dedicated to creating a wonderful consumer experience, then you can do that. Just to kind of recap on these couple of principles, the simplifying principle in the Henry Ford style basically means that the product is going to be a cheaper product normally to produce, and thus you can pass the cost savings onto the consumer. And that fits in very, very well in the Amazon marketplace, where there's always a downwards pressure on prices. The type of proposition simplifier, in other words, simple to use, like the iPad or the iPhone, but complicated to make, is normally a premium price product, because of course you as a producer have massive troubles producing it in the first place, because there is a barrier to entry because it's difficult. Otherwise, everyone would be doing it, right? So that is probably something I would only explore if I'm an advanced seller. If you are an advanced seller, then that is something to think about. So again, in terms of elimination, really what we're talking about is eliminating features or processes. If you're going to, for example, produce a frying pan, could you get rid of the handle? So you just produce literally the pan and people just hold it with a cloth or something like that. Maybe that would be good for traveling. It's a bit of a random example. I can only say that just brings to mind because I was just cooking a steak for dinner. So that may not be the greatest example, but you get the idea. By eliminating features of a product, we can often simplify it. We can often reduce the cost for ourselves and thus pass on some of that saving to consumers. And if it's a desirable feature change, then it can also make the product actually more sellable, not less. Now, that's not an easy thing to do. You're going to have to use your imagination and really, really, really understand the consumer and exactly what they need and provide what they need in an elegant, stripped down way to make this approach work. But I really do think it does work. I've seen examples of it, but you've got to use your brain. So these are just big picture concepts, and we'll look at some specifics in a second. So big picture concepts, just to recap, the 80-20 principle, most of what we do doesn't matter. 20% of anything will produce 80% of the wins, and 20% of things will produce 80% of the downsides, the losing money products, the headache products that the consumers are always bitching about, that the suppliers are always messing up on. The STAR principle, if something is not a leader in a fast-growing market, and that is most products, then you should consider eliminating it. And I'm not saying you should just do that overnight without thinking it through, but it should be on your list. And then the simplify principle, what can you eliminate features or aspects of a product, or for that matter, packaging or anything, just to simplify it down so it reduces your costs and thus you can offer it to the consumer at a better price as well. So let's give you a few examples of areas for elimination now. So zooming back out into the big picture for the moment, life. Okay, so as a way of thinking, you can look at entire careers as being things you should eliminate. And a lot of people, of course, who want to build an e-commerce business want to eliminate their day job. So that is, in a sense, pretty relevant to many of the people listening if you're still doing a day job of some kind. Jobs, I mean, an entire career is one thing. A specific job, you might want to just decide to fire your boss. Job roles, sometimes you can change some of the things that are involved in your job. And you might say, you know what, and this is classic for entrepreneurs, you know, my job up till now has involved coordinating sourcing and designing products and selling them on Amazon and doing the photography. And you know what, I'm going to get rid of those roles from my job. From now on, I'm going to call myself the chief executive officer, the CEO or managing director of my company, and I'm going to outsource that stuff. Entire businesses, sometimes a business works and sometimes it doesn't. It's a high risk, high gain kind of activity. And one of the things we can say is that sometimes a business needs to come to an end. As Mr. Wonderful or Kevin O'Leary says from Shark Tank, sometimes if your business isn't making a profit within 3 years, you should take it behind the chicken shed and shoot it. I can't even say that phrase, but yeah, it's a bit harsh, but I think he's got a point. So sometimes you need to eliminate an entire business. Relationship. Sometimes an entire relationship goes so far wrong that you need to get rid of it. I'm not really qualified to talk about personal relationships, although we all know that can be true. But even in the realm of business, sometimes a business partner just proves untrustworthy. Sometimes a supplier is a disaster and you just need to stop that. So-called financial assets sometimes in life need to be eliminated. So if you've got a property that's supposed to be making you cash flow and all it does is cost you money, maybe you sell it. Even more generally, eliminating destructive habits is very, very powerful. So eliminating addictions, for example, to alcohol, cigarettes, daytime TV, whatever it is, you name it. So those are powerful things. And that's, you know, pretty pretty major for a large number of entrepreneurs. Again, they can have a somewhat obsessive kind of personality, which can sometimes make them vulnerable to some pretty unhealthy habits. So what about the business specific things then? That's obviously where our main aim is. So first of all, big picture, I think eliminating ineffective businesses, we've already talked about that. If your business is poorly positioned as a whole, for example, if you're trying to grow a business in the high street in Britain right now, you're fighting two big trends. One is Brexit, which is making a really difficult job of anything British, especially if we're going to import goods, is going to make things more uncertain. That isn't in itself a reason not to do it. But if you add to that the fact that the high street is generally dying relative to the growth of the online business world, and you can see that if you have an offline component to your business, you may wish to eliminate that. Another big picture thing is business partnerships. Sometimes you will discover that you are working really hard and you've got a partnership of two people or an alleged partnership, but actually they're hardly contributing anything. Sometimes, frankly, it can be the other way around as well. So if you are a person that's hardly making any efforts and you're gaining a lot, then that's not very sustainable. I mean, I'm not suggesting that you give up an advantageous position overnight, but longer term, that's not sustainable. So giving up business partnerships that don't work isn't always about the fact that your business partner or the other person in a partnership isn't the right person. It may be that you're not the right person for them. And I've certainly been in that position in the past where I wasn't able to commit with the same level of passion to a certain type of business that somebody else was. And in the end, the right thing to do was to shut it down or to offer to have him buy me out. And because it wasn't doing very much, it wasn't a big deal for him to do that. Another big picture thing, we talked about eliminating product lines quite a lot. So that's obviously really important. When I say bigger picture, I suppose you're probably looking at entire areas of products rather than just individual products. So for example, if you've been in the swimwear business or something, maybe everyone else has got into that in private labeled the hell out of it and there's no profit left in it, in which case it may be time to sell the business before it's apparent to everybody else that that's the case, or it may be time to shut that down and, you know, take the profit and move out of that product line into other things. Talking big picture, it may be that you will want to remove an entire marketplace or sales channel from your portfolio. For example, Will Churnland, when I spoke to him first, which was about in 2015, all the way back then, he'd been working with his brother for several years, and they had actually a previous year or the year before that made $6 million on Amazon in revenue and about $1 million in eBay. And the following year, they shut down their eBay business, which may sound crazy because it's making revenue and that's all good, right? But no, all revenue is not born equal. And even though it was profitable to a degree, it was taking so much of their time and effort up. Will said that when we spoke about it, that eBay had taken up as much time and effort to run as the Amazon wing of the business, but obviously had made a sixth of the money. So there's a massive opportunity cost there, and they made the judgment that it wasn't worth running the eBay side of things and shut things down. Now, this isn't me saying you shouldn't run an eBay wing to your business. I'm not saying you should either. The point is that in their particular case, they found that the customer service element and the sort of hassle and time and management element were just not worth it. So if that turns out to be true for you, then don't ignore the writing on the wall. Just if that's the honest truth, just look the truth in the face and eliminate that and put your efforts into something else. Because one of the things I should have articulated better at the beginning of this is really the power of elimination is about getting rid of bad use of money so you can reallocate that money to other things, bad use of time so you can reallocate that time, and bad use of your mental focus or stress in order to reallocate that energy to something else. So that is really the key to all of this stuff. The reason to eliminate things isn't in a vacuum. It is because there is always an opportunity cost. If you're selling a product that's making a loss, there is money tied up in that product and time and energy and mental focus and indeed mental anguish sometimes that would be much, much better spent on a product that makes a profit, all things being equal. The final big picture thing about businesses, I would say, is to eliminate a company which will have no future value. So if you've got a business or a company which is based on retail arbitrage or wholesale relationships, it's good to take cash flow now. But I think, again, in terms of the STAR principle, if you want to create something that has value, you're going to need to fund it from something. And if you have a business that has no future value, but which is producing plenty of cash now, then you should use the cash produced by the current business, wholesale or retail arbitrage, whatever it is, to fund a private label or custom product business that can be sold in future because it has future value. So that's more of a subtle payoff. That's not something you should necessarily so much eliminate the company that or the business that has the current value overnight, but you should gradually eliminate it, if you like, over a period of 2 or 3 years, or shift the capital and the focus over to the private label stuff. And that's exactly what a couple of members of the Million Pound Mastermind are doing. They have very successful wholesale-based businesses based on relationships with distributors and manufacturers, but they are both transitioning their businesses over to the private label model because they know that they can build a future value of a business and then have a sellable asset. Or at the very least, even if they keep the asset, it's more defensible in the future as well. So let's talk about products. We've talked about eliminating entire product lines. In this case, we can talk about the elements of a product. For example, as we talked about before, features that cost the business money but don't add enough values to the market to get you extra profit or extra sales. For example, if you have, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head, but I used to sell a metronome tuner, which not tuner as in the fish, but something that tunes your guitar for you. A metronome tuner with a fish on it would be quite unnecessary, I think. So this metronome tuner offered some features, but it sort of fell in between stools. Actually, I would have been better off selling a tuning device that just did that, but was way cheaper, easier to use, smaller, lighter, etc. In the end, I had to just can that product because it was a product that had multiple features built into it. It was also an electronic product from China, so that's something else you might want to consider eliminating because it had a massive defect rate, and that's often the case. Another thing you may want to do, of course, obviously, is to eliminate costs. Nobody wants extra costs as a seller. Sometimes you can eliminate that by simply having a talk to your supplier. That's obviously normally goes together with eliminating features, and you need to be very careful about the payoff between the lower cost and the, you know, the quality of what you produce. Sometimes you can do some simpler things. You can eliminate some packaging if it's unnecessary. For example, if something's got a sort of sleeve around it that doesn't look particularly nice and is there to protect the product, if you risk or experiment, shall we say, trying a shipment without that protective sleeve on it, then you may find that the product holds up very well in transit without it, and you've saved yourself another 50 cents or whatever it is. Another thing you can do is look at your supply chain as a whole and eliminate unnecessary parts of it. This is really good. I mean, basically, if you've got a process that has multiple parts, if you eliminate phases or steps in a process, not only do you simplify it, but you, by definition, by simplifying the process, you normally make it more reliable as well. So if your supply chain includes, for example, sending your products from a warehouse, from a factory, I should say, in China to a warehouse in the USA and then on to Amazon warehouses in the USA, you might want to ship direct from your supplier to the warehouse in the USA. Now, that's only going to work if you've got the packaging and the supply chain as a whole correct, so that your products aren't getting damaged in transit, and never, ever skip inspection in China. That is not ever worth eliminating. In my experience, even if you're buying a couple of hundred units, you still end up with all sorts of junk to deal with at the other end, in my experience. Let's talk about overheads now. One of the major overhead creep things that you find with an Amazon business right from day one is software, because there's always somebody selling you a software which, when you buy it, seems rational and probably is a rational decision to add Helium 10 to the mix to do your product research. And then you add Viral Launch to the mix, and then you add Jungle Scout, and suddenly you're spending the best part of $300 a month, or, you know, over $3,000 a year on just your product research software. Then you probably need some software to manage the profit and loss, etc., etc. It adds up very quickly. Now, I don't suggest, again, that you eliminate everything all the time mindlessly. I think you need to be clear. For example, if you are in the early stages of creating an Amazon business, then you need to focus on product research almost exclusively, in which case you probably should spend decent money on a good quality product research software that is easy to use and gives you the right answers. And the three that I've mentioned are the three standard ones. And I'm an affiliate for Helium 10 and Jungle Scout. I'm not for Viral Launch, but, you know, use whichever one you find best. I find them quite similar. I guess Helium 10 has the edge for me in terms of usability. But the point is, don't be foolish about spending the money on that at that point. But it may be that if you've launched one or two products and you haven't got the cash to launch any others for a few months, that you want to pause or just stop your subscription to such things, for example. People are obviously another massive overhead that can add up very quickly. And I've experienced that over the last year, more with Amazing FBA than with Amazon. But it's been good to get some stuff done and to delegate, but sometimes you can increase the overheads but without increasing your revenue enough, and that's something you've got to be very careful about. Now, the right place to spend money on people, I think, is either very low value actions, which should be for a few dollars an hour, probably somebody in the Philippines traditionally. And then there are some amazing people in the Philippines. They are very hard workers and very intelligent people. Amazing how much work you can get from somebody for a few dollars. But sometimes you can afford to pay somebody good money if it will get you a return on investment. I mean, good business coaching, is that one of those things? I mean, I've spent good money on business coaching in the last 6 months, and I think it will take a year or two for that to really fully show up in fruition. But I think, for example, it's got me finally to the point that I've got a new website going, or a newly designed website for Amazing FBA. And that's taken probably over $1,000 worth of designers and developers and whatever to put together as well. But I do think over the course of the next few months, that will pay off in terms of increased optimization of sales, increased conversions and things like that. So some things are worth spending money on. And I would say those things are the things where you can see you can get a return on investment fairly straightforwardly. You just need to be careful not to keep adding people to the mix as a solution to the problem. And sometimes you need to eliminate entire processes as well. I mean, sometimes an entire way of doing things needs to be got rid of. And, you know, if you've been trying to source products by going to the Canton Fair, then I would suggest, with respect, that everybody I know who's been there says it's a great place to meet other sellers, but it's a lousy place to meet suppliers. I mean, it's great to go to your supplier's factory and have a very strong relationship with them. And several members of the Million Pound Mastermind have had incredible experience of that recently. I'm going to factory where they literally rolled out the red carpet and the entire factory lined up alongside it for them, that kind of experience. That's very worthwhile. But the Canton Fair, you might as well do on Alibaba, I think, because a lot of the same people are there. So, for example. So we talked about relationships very briefly. We talked about business partnerships. Supplier relationships often need to end. If your suppliers mess you about with quality or something once too often, then you just need to be hard-hearted. And however much time you've invested in that relationship, it's not worth it if it's not producing reliable results. Ineffective gurus, sometimes there are people that you follow the podcasts and you've got to make that judgment for yourself. You may decide that I'm one of those people, in which case you've got to make that judgment. I have to respect that. I mean, I do my best to be realistic about things and to pass on real world information from all the top sellers that I work with and for. But there are people that are just unrealistic out there, and they paint an overly rosy picture. And I think you need to eliminate that kind of person and that kind of thinking from your life, because it's not really going to serve you. Masterminds of groups that aren't really masterminds, they're not really masterminds of your peers. If you're hanging around conferences or so-called masterminds or masterclasses with a bunch of newbies and you're an advanced seller, guess what? They're not going to move you forward. So I would say that's also something very important, that you need to get rid of the time you spend with ineffective people in order to make the time for people who are effective. A couple more areas, financials. If you've got unprofitable products, then you should be considering getting rid of them. The same with indefensible products. So that's really more about products than finances, really. Time, again, low value tasks. You should be getting rid of anything that's going to cost you less than a few dollars an hour to outsource. You shouldn't really be doing it unless you really, really have to, and you should get rid of that. There are some tasks that have no value at all. Certain types of filing, bits of paper that you're never going to use, filing emails, eliminating emails, creating subfolders for emails. That's all just meaningless stuff. Don't do it. Low value or even destructive. You know, people that you have to manage, don't manage idiots. If people really don't get it, you have to let them go. And then finally, people in the broader sense, unproductive team members, bad business partnerships, and we've talked about that before, and low value or even destructive customers. Now, that's difficult on Amazon, but some people just aren't worth having as customers. And if you have a choice about that, then you should definitely try and eliminate bad customers. So that's a bit of a small hint of the many places where the power of elimination can get rid of bad things, bad use of money, bad use of time, bad use of energy, and free it up for the good stuff. So next time you create a to-do list, don't forget to look at it and think about creating a not to-do list or an elimination list. And I think it's a fantastic practice once a quarter to sit down and create a not to-do list. What products, what people, what business is you know, in business ideas or business plans, businesses themselves, am I going to just eliminate as not worth spending my valuable time above all on? Because time is the only non-renewable resource. In the end, opportunity cost and time are the two things that you need to take more seriously than anything else, in my experience. Thanks very much for listening. Hope this was helpful. Speak to you in the next show.
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.